Arrigonato!
This is Brock and Salk.
You want to go to the Seahawks game? All right, give me one more screen.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
I would put very little stock in what Brock Buehr has to say.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app.
Salk, the third time in 2 days, is flat out wrong.
And 710sports.com.
Oh, look at this. Look who's back. It's Bob Stelton, Jake Heap, sitting in for Brock and Salk today. He said, man, it went so well that last time. Let's try it one more time, see if it was beginner's luck.
Let's see if the magic is still there.
It's hard to create magic this early in the morning, I got to be honest.
Amen to that.
We'll do our best.
I don't know who gets up this early.
Howdy does it every day.
Unbelievable. I just marvel every time I'm up this early because it doesn't happen often.
I don't know how these guys do it. I'm sitting here and I've done it twice in a week and all that. And I'm like, man, this is tough. Doing it every day.
It's maybe easier once you get in the groove.
You just accept
how miserable it is.
And once you make as much money as we do, too, it's a lot easier.
Oh, yeah. When you're rolling in the dough, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
What time do you go to sleep?
Oh, like 9:30, 10.
Yeah, I can't do that.
I can't do that either.
I put my kid down. Me and my wife, we got to watch our shows. Like, that's our time to just kind of unwind a little bit. I'd have a hard time giving that up.
Yeah, it's different. And you'll be happy to know, Kyle, that there's actually still traffic coming from West Seattle at that time of morning. what a joy I'm
there's
learning.
Always traffic, Bob.
I just moved to West Seattle. I've stayed out there three nights now.
Three nights.
And every time I've come across, doesn't matter what time it is, there's traffic. And I don't know when I was looking at the place that I never went during a prime time. I actually came back from West Seattle like 5:30 at night, 6 o'clock at night, thinking, okay, this is where I'm going to see how bad it is. Nothing going into Seattle.
We were talking first night. You're like, man, I'm really hoping that this is just a one-time thing.
Yeah, no.
No.
It's a disaster.
Even 6 a.m., Bob, 6 a.m. in traffic.
And it's people not paying attention, man. Merging is such a unique skill out here. It is really just... I've never seen anything like it, and I'm from here, but I've lived in Chicago and L.A. and St. Louis. Worst drivers I've ever experienced live here.
Really?
Sorry. It's a true story.
Unbelievable.
True story. But anyway, we're here. It's going to be a good day. It is a Friday. We're going to get you ready for the Seahawks and the Raiders over in London. We'll speak with Brock Heward. We'll speak with our buddy Brady Henderson. Did you get a chance to watch much of what they called a football game last night? Because it seemed like the Eagles scrimmaging against a semi-pro team. It was dreadful.
Well, and the thing was, the Giants, they just look disconjointed. I mean, they just look like, so far this season, that they haven't been able to put anything together that's been positive other than the fact that you got a super talented receiver in Odell Beckham Jr., and when you're able to feed him the ball, he's able to do some great things with it. And then you've got this running back in Saquon Barkley who is just unbelievable.
He looks special. He looks special. And here, for those of you that didn't see him last night, here's a little audio of what it sounds like to be Saquon Barkley.
Manning out of the shotgun throws a screen right for Barkley. Barkley takes it to the outside of the 40, cuts back left into Eagles territory, still on his feet, sheds another tackler. He's to the 35, turns left to the 30. He's to the 25, hurdles another man to the 15, and finally tackled at the 13-yard line. This rookie can do everything.
He can. He can. He's electric. That's my first extended watch of him.
Yeah.
I've sat down and watched a Giants game.
What's been incredible is you see a lot of guys like Reggie Bush, for example, right?
Yeah.
Imagine how electric, just picture that, how electric he was in college and everything that he was able to do, and it didn't quite translate into the NFL. He still was able to be a productive player in a specific role on a certain team, but he wasn't able to just do what he did in college. Saquon Barkley, everything that he did in college has translated into the NFL. He is this rare, rare combination of size and speed and agility and wherewithal. He's got an incredible football IQ. Saquon Barkley is absolutely this player that can change the course of a game. And unfortunately for him, he doesn't have a great offensive line where he's going to be able to carry the ball 20 to 30 times like you would like to see him. But, man, what he's able to do in the amount of touches that he gets, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, only 13 carries last night. Now, I know they got behind. They were down 14-3 at the end of the first quarter, and it was 24-6 at the end of the half. So,
yeah,
you got to start throwing the ball, which Manning did 43 times. And I know you didn't get a chance to watch every moment of that game, but there were some plays where Eli Manning looked so disconnected from the receiver. One of them had no idea what was going on.
Yeah.
I'm just going to default to the receiver because I just refuse to believe Eli Manning is that off of his game.
Yeah.
Yeah, guys are going to miss passes. You know better than anybody. Mm-hmm. You're not throwing darts every single time, but some of them just look so completely. He's running one way, he's throwing the other. He's throwing to a spot where I guess he thinks the guy's going to be. Nobody's there. The optics are really bad when it's surrounding a guy that's already being surrounded with questions of, is he cooked? Is mm-hmm. he done? Is it time to move on from him? Yeah. Last night was not a good way to defend yourself for
right.
that.
No, for sure. And to me, the way I see this and the way I've watched it unfold is I think Eli Manning is still a good football player. I think he's still a productive quarterback in this league. But I think with this team and this franchise, I think it's over. I think last year it was over. And the best thing that could have happened to Eli Manning was for him to get out of the New York Giants and to get on to and move on to another football team, because that locker room and specifically the offensive players in that locker room are not Eli Manning fannies or not Eli Manning fans
and, or fannies, whatever.
Yeah, or fannies, yeah. Whatever. And I that's the part where it's not a healthy environment right now. So you see Eli, who's typically a very calm and has a very calm demeanor out on the field, and he's getting after receivers.
Yeah, you saw him get a little agitated last night, so yeah. That led me to believe, all right, this guy ran the wrong route, or he didn't do something, because that's just not in his nature, Eli,
yeah.
I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So it was just weird to see. It was odd. I'm glad I'm not a Giants fan, because outside of Barkley, I don't feel great about anything on that team.
I would agree with you.
Their line is terrible. And then you had Odell Beckham Jr. leaving the field early at the half. Now, it was mm-hmm. only, I think there were 2 seconds on the clock, but team still ran a play, and he's walking through the tunnel. He was asked about it after the game, said, well, I needed IV.
Yeah.
So how do you take, and I want to move on to Seahawks here in a sec, but just as a guy out there, whether it's college, high school, yeah. pro, one of your guys leaves
he
early.
Needed an IV, Bob. What do you... You I have mean, no sympathy for the man?
No, I don't think I do.
Bro.
I think he's got a resume.
Was it overly hot in that game? I thought it was a night game. I thought,
Yeah, it was IVs. Like 95 degrees, 86% humidity. He was pouring out sweat. He had to go.
Once again, for a team that's struggling and all of his comments and all that, mm-hmm. it's a bad look.
It is. It's a bad situation. And unfortunately, I don't see them getting over this anytime soon. I think this is going to be a thing that continues to fester over this over the season. And the thing that has been amazing is, yes, the Giants drafted a quarterback this offseason, but they're not his Eli Manning's number one competition, the guy that was pushing him all offseason, Davis Webb. They got rid of him, and he's now on the Jets practice squad. But that was the guy that you could turn to and say, maybe, okay, if Eli Manning isn't playing well, we could turn to this guy. Right now, Eli Manning is clearly the best quarterback on that roster. So to make any type of move at this point, it's not going to happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out.
Yeah, and then quickly, just Odell Beckham Jr., I feel like, is just a pain. I understand they just invested a lot of money in him, and he's a great talent.
Yeah.
But, man, he doesn't feel like a guy that is – it's not a benefit to have that personality around when things are going wrong. I don't think he's a good leader. I think he's a brilliant player.
Yeah.
I liken him to Cam Newton. Great front runners. Fantastic front runners.
Right.
Not good leaders. Not good guys to have around when things are looking really dark.
Yeah, and the thing that really bothers me about that situation is I don't have a problem with a player demanding better or wanting better or a receiver asking for the ball more. I mean, that's kind of expected, especially a player of his caliber. That's not an unusual thing. You see marquee top five receivers demanding the football throughout the course of the NFL history. But the thing that really bothers me is this man's just been paid top dollar. And with a little adversity so far in the season, he has already gone after his quarterback. He's already gone after his head coach. He has created more dissension in that locker room when they need a guy that's there to help rally. And what he's done is he's created more division in that locker room. And you can't have that from one of your marquee players, and especially the guy that you've just paid top dollar. You can't have that.
Man, I'll be very interested to see how this plays out, because Barkley is an incredible talent.
Yeah, and Barkley's the exact opposite. Barkley is one of the best.
Well, you worked out with him, right?
Yeah, yeah. I had a chance to work out with him twice, actually. One at the Nike opening in Portland, Oregon, when he was going to be a senior at Penn State. And, you know, we're able to throw to him and run routes. And at his size, it is incredible to see what he can do. He's a natural route runner and pass catcher as a running back, and that is super rare to see from a guy his size. And then I was down in L.A. with him when I was working out with Russell after he did the QB to QB interview with Russell Wilson. And the thing is that that guy is, one of the nicest human beings, freakish athlete, and three, probably one of the hardest workers I've ever seen. When you talk about a role model for kids, you want to look at a guy like Saquon Barkley. And give you an example, when we were L.A., Russell was trying to, in between production shoots, we were trying to get a workout in and all that, and they just finished Saquon Barkley's interview, and we're down on the field working out, and you could see Saquon kind of walking through the UCLA weight room, and him and his agent and all that, his little entourage that he had, and he had his backpack with him, and he looked out, and you could see that he just saw us, and he's like, hey, what's going on? He came out on the field. It's like, hey, can I join your guys' workout? Can I throw with you guys? And we were like, yeah, sure, man. Like, do you have cleats? He's like, oh, yeah, I got them in my backpack right here. Like, he's
let's roll.
Yeah, he's going to a interview, an ESPN interview, and he's got his backpack with his cleats, with his bands to stretch out. Like, he's ready to roll at all times.
Awesome.
And the guy is just unbelievable in terms of his work ethic.
Let's get to it. Need to know.
Need to know. The voice of Seattle sports.
Brought to you by VenueKings.com.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Seahawks are actually practicing as we speak. The time difference is crazy.
Yeah, it is.
It's still dark out here. It's 3 in the afternoon there, a little after 3 in the afternoon there. Going through final prep for their matchup with the Raiders on Sunday. 10 a.m., by the way.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot of people say, does it start at 6 a.m.? 7 a.m.? Like, no, it's 10 a.m.
I was concerned about that. And when I saw 10 a.m., I'm like, oh, man, thank
well,
goodness.
Well, if that was the case, I'd have to watch it on DVR.
Right. And everybody would. unless you're Kyle and Boy Howdy over here. I mean, no way.
They'll be up and ready.
Yeah, exactly. But to me, this is a really important matchup for the Seahawks to be able to take this thing, make the record even at 3-3. This is a game that they absolutely should win and, in my opinion, have to win. You can't give up these gimme games. And in the NFL, nothing's a gimme, but with this Raiders team, they're struggling, they're hurting. There's a lot of, you talk about dissension, there's some dissension in that organization right now from top to bottom. And in the Seahawks, this is a perfect opportunity to get a W in London.
Yeah, that's a team game.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Hey, major Pac-12 North implications tomorrow. Autzen Stadium, Huskies, Ducks.
Oof.
Now, what was the stat you gave me this morning, Kyle? Only the fifth time?
Fifth time in 111 matchups. They're both top 20.
Wow, I would have guessed way over if you gave me the over-under number on that, but this is as big as it gets, and the hate is as deep as it runs, right?
It is, and I'm so fired up for this matchup because not only that in terms of the rankings, but these two teams match up pretty evenly with each other. So this game, not only is it going to be a hostile environment down in Autzen Stadium, but these two teams are going to – this is going to be a very, very close game, and it's going to come down to a couple key plays, going to come down to turnovers – and we're going to find out a lot about these two football teams come this Saturday. I cannot wait.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Mike Hopkins, beginning his second season at UW as the Huskies men's hoop team, was picked to finish third in the Pac-12 in the preseason media poll. They received two first-place votes. How about that?
Yeah, this team, it's exciting to see a coach like Mike Hopkins be able to do what he's done in a very, very short amount of time. Actually, Andy Katz from ESPN, his power rankings, he had them as the number one team in the Pac-12 and the number 18 team in the country. And he stated, I know that a lot of people are going to give me grief, but I think that this Husky team has the length, finally has the length that Mike Hopkins wants for that 2-3 zone to be not only good, but be suffocating like it was in Syracuse. I'm very excited about this Huskies basketball team.
You big college hoops fan?
I love it. I love it. When it's good, it's good.
You play?
I did. It was basketball was my first love, man.
Really?
Oh yeah. But when I figured out probably a 6'2 white guy point guard's not gonna, chances aren't good for you.
So, you didn't have the speed?
I just didn't have the hops.
The handles,
all that? I was a pretty good little hooper, though.
Okay. All right. There you go. Need to know. We have John. Is John Clayton ready? Joining us from afar?
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
If you want to take care of him, take care of him now. And the price is only going to go up.
Every morning at 7:15.
He's too important to let go. You're not trying to
totally break everything down.
Plus. A wild card.
What magic trick would you like to be able to perform?
Yeah, I can maybe try to have you disappear. That could be nice.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Brock and Salk.
John Clayton.
JC.
Yes.
How are you? You made it. How was the trip? How was the flight?
It was long, I can tell you that. About 12 to 13 hours in the air because I went through Houston. So that was 4 hours, 4.5 hours down to Houston, and then about 8 to 8.5 hours over to London from Houston. So that's a long time.
Man.
And so I'm pretty tired. Did not sleep on the plane, naturally, because I just...
You didn't sleep on the plane? What did you do? Did you bring some stuff to entertain you on the flight?
Well, I mean, I still was able to do some work, but also I did watch some movies. That was one thing that they have kind of set up there.
Because
it was the Raiders and they're the oldest team in football, I was able to watch Jurassic World. So that was something I think was very appropriate to kind of get ready for the Raider game.
What was your rating on Jurassic World?
I liked it. I thought it was pretty good. I gave it a B.
Okay. All right. I've heard mixed reviews. Okay. A B from Jason.
Yeah, no, I think, again, it just fits the whole series. I mean, you have to have at least five times where the animals eat somebody. So it's like it's kind of like a feeding frenzy. I was able to watch a little bit of Han Solo. So I got a little bit of Star Wars in there. So that was kind of good. And I saw one real strange movie about drug cartels and the government trying to attack that. That was kind of a weird one.
Hey, John, did you get a chance to watch any of last night's game?
I did not, because when you fly over the pond, they just don't have the ability to pick up anything on DirecTV or any kind of the network. So it's like no live TV on the plane.
Well, I'll summarize it for you. Giants are atrocious, but Saquon Barkley is special. How about that?
That's, I think, pretty accurate because, again, you can see a lot of people think, and I agree, he might be the best running back to come into the league since Adrian Peterson. Todd Gurley is probably a close second, but Barkley's really good. But unfortunately, I think the Giants made a mistake. Where it's great to get a great running back, it's better to get a good young quarterback if your quarterback, Eli Manning, is on the decline. And Eli looks old. They would have been better served to take Sam Darnold because I think Darnold is going to be a real good one, and they didn't do it.
Yeah, going off that, John, it's been interesting because especially after this game, there's been so much dissension in that locker room, and especially on the topic of Eli Manning. And they really did nothing to find a replacement for him moving forward. I know they drafted Kyle Uletta in the fourth round, but he's nowhere ready to see the field. I mean, do you see them making a change anytime soon?
Well, they can't change this year. I mean, they just have to kind of stick by it and just play out the season. And I don't know. I mean, can the Oregon quarterback, Hebert, be the one Herbert be the one that can go out there and be the equal of Sam Darnold? I mean, I know that his stock is rising. Most people think that he is going to be the first quarterback taken in this draft. But now, if they struck out on Darnold, is he better than Darnold? I don't think he is.
Yeah. Hey, John, what do you think of this Nick Vinette injury, him being on the practice report, this back injury? How concerned are you about this?
I think it's okay because, I mean, at least he was able to be in the walkthrough yesterday, limited, and I would imagine he's just going to gut it out. I mean, it's one of those things where they're so thin on tight ends, unless they make a roster move, and, of course, to make a roster move, now you have to fly somebody in on a very quick basis because, it takes so long to get over here. The fact that they didn't make a roster move, I think, is encouraging that he should be able to play because all they have is Daryl Daniels and George Fant. And so I don't know. I mean, Vinette, and again, I saw him after the game, and I saw him walking around in the locker room on Wednesday or on Tuesday. So I think he's going to be fine. He just has to gut it up because, remember, he does have a bye week after this to kind of rest the back.
John, is this going to be a do-or-die game for your guy Brandon Marshall? Because we expect that Ed Dixon's going to be coming back here soon along with J.D. McKissick. They're going to have to make roster moves, and it feels like Marshall's been bumped down in the pecking order. that, I don't know. I feel like this game means a lot to him. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's probably accurate because now he's down to 7 plays, and he's effectively now the 5th wide receiver. And they do have Keenan Reynolds, who they like as the 6th wide receiver. And you know, they'll have to get a roster spot in another week for Dixon because, yeah, you know, and it's not going to be, you know, so it could, it very well could be Brandon Marshall because, he has to pick up his game. I think they like the big body. I think they like what the potential for him to do in the red zone and in the end zone. But, I mean, you can't have 2 games where you drop 4 passes, including the 1 game where he dropped 3. And you notice as soon as he had the 4th drop, then his playing time started to decrease. David Moore started getting a little bit more, and you saw some of the other guys get a little bit more.
John, is this the wild card? Is this where? How are you ready for this?
Time now for the wild card.
I'll cut audio.
Wild card,
Mr. Professor Clayton. It's time for Fan Fiction Friday.
Yes.
Oh, John boy. Clayton is a police dispatcher who lives a quiet life with his pet cat, played by Boy Howdy. One day, when they're on a stroll through the neighborhood, Clayton and Howdy are struck by lightning. Somehow, both survive, but now John Clayton can telecommunicate with his pet cat, Howdy, and Howdy Cat grows to the size of a Bengal tiger. Watch as Clayton and Howdy decide to shake up their boring lives and become a crime-fighting duo, ultimately taking on John Travolta and his crime syndicate in the most daring fight the world has ever seen. What do you think, John?
Well, the first problem is, you know, I'm not a big cat guy, right? So it's like I'm going to be trying to get the that lightning strike on the cat because I'm just not big on the cats. Sorry to say that. But the fact that I guess we can grow this into a tiger-like a thing and he's no longer a cat, then I think I could be okay on this. And then we can start attacking and trying to win this war. And I'm trying to figure out now how John Travolta is going to at least compliment and try to fight this off because, I mean, you know, Travolta has so many different type of roles that he's had. But can he handle the tiger? I don't know.
Nobody will ever accuse John of not playing along. Beautiful. John, enjoy your time out there.
And again, this was a tough one because, again, I'm not a cat guy. That's the one thing that
I know.
That's
the hardest
knows.
Thing to get over in this whole thing.
Boy Howdy threw you off right there.
Played by Boy Howdy, even. I like that.
No doubt.
Thanks, John. Have fun out there.
All right, thanks.
There you go, John Clayton. James, are you always part of the story, and how long does it take you to come up with
that? I'm always in it. Clayton's always in it, and he's always doing some sort of a different trade.
How long does it take you to come up with that?
About, a while.
About a while.
I don't want to let all my secrets out,
How
Bob.
Do you get prepared for a role as a tiger? What do you have to do?
He's a cat.
There's a lot of study involved. I spent a lot of time in zoos. Probably have to go on a couple excursions, honestly, in the Sahara.
He's got to find his motivation. He's got to tap
Clayton's
into
got
that
enough
character.
Issues dealing with Howdy, and now he's got to deal with Howdy as a cat. This is pretty much his worst nightmare.
He really focused in on that one. Really? Just dialed in on that one. Unbelievable. All right. So we get a chance to speak with the one and only Brock Huard. Is that the deal? He's going to grace us with his presence. We're going to talk about this Husky matchup.
Man.
It's huge.
It's big.
As much as there should be more hate, I guess, between the Cougs and the Huskies, there just isn't. It's between the Ducks and the Huskies.
You know,
it makes this
honestly,
awesome.
It's interesting. The rivalry between WSU and UW definitely is a big rivalry and a tough rivalry. But at the end of the day, I feel like UW, WSU fans, and people are going to probably get on me about this, but I feel like they respect each other more, whereas the UW Oregon fans, it is hate. It
Hey,
is hate. Now, trust me.
Kyle's giving me the eyes. Ducks.
But I'm telling you, as much as they want to think this, the UW-Oregon rivalry, there is more hatred.
Oh, yeah.
More hatred between those two teams than there is between UW-WSU. I don't know why, but that's the case. I'm telling you.
That's good.
Telling you.
All right. We'll come back. We'll talk to Brock Huard about that, the Seahawks, and what's going on with this Pac-12 officiating nonsense. He's going to touch on all of that next. It is Brock and Salk with Bob Stelt and Jake Heaps.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
It is Brock and Salk, Bob Stelton, Jake Heaps with you. Both guys are out, but we're efforting Brock right now. Trying to get the big guy on the line. Is he with us? He's on the Venue Kings hotline. Is this right? The one, the only Brock Huard is with us?
Good morning, man.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Good morning.
It's a great day at the Homewood Suites here in Salt Lake City.
Oh, yeah.
Good morning.
Salt Lake City treating you right?
Salt Lake City is beautiful. It is a beautiful. It reminds me a lot, Jake, of obviously Provo, which is only 50 minutes away. And I'm curious, is there much difference between Provo and Salt Lake City from your years of experience?
Well, people would be upset to hear me say this, but no, there's not really a huge difference.
Why would they be upset?
Well, just
is that an insult?
Well, Salt Lake City, Provo, there, you know, it is different in its own unique way.
Okay. Is Brock going to have a tough time getting liquored up the way he likes to?
Yeah. Well, Salt Lake City, that's different. That's where it comes down to. Salt Lake City, that's more okay.
Okay.
In Provo, it's going to be tougher to find that. That's going to be a challenge.
That's what they say here, Bob. They say Salt Lake City's full of the sinners. And then, you know, the really good folks are over in Provo.
I got you. All right. So Brock's feeling out of place is what he's telling us in an indirect way.
That's right. That's you. Right.
Hey, Brock, quickly, I just want to throw one at you outside of the Seahawks. I just need a quarterback perspective on this outside of Jake because he talked about it. But watching that game last night between the Giants and the Eagles, the Giants looked horrific, and Eli Manning looked bad. But I couldn't tell if he was bad or the receiver. I refuse to believe he's that off, that he's just lost that much of his game. It's got to be the receivers or the communication. I don't know how much you saw, but he looked atrocious in that.
Well, Bob, if this was just a one-off, if you're just talking about one game last night where, man, maybe Eli's sick or maybe he's fighting through injury that you don't know, but this has been, you know, we have seen this for the last few years. We've seen just the downward trend, and it was so telling as you just watch that game. One guy's got legs, right? I remember Warren Moon saying this. You know, Warren said, I could have played till I was 50, your arm and your brain and everything else. And I remember watching him practice when I was at the UW and he was with the Seahawks. And I think he was my age now, like 42 or something crazy. And, man, he could still throw the ball. But he's like, yeah, you lose your legs. You know, the older you get, you lose your legs. It's really hard to have any juice there. And when you watch, you know, these young guys, when you watch Mahomes, when you watch Carson Wentz, when you watch even Mitch Trubisky, when you watch these guys, heck, even Jared Goff last week, you know, Bob, who's not a tremendous athlete, but on 3rd and 12 or 3rd and 10 can scramble for 12 yards. There's just no juice. Eli's got no juice. If the pocket breaks down, if anything is not right around him, he just cannot create. So everything is multiplied. The protection, the receivers, the routes. You know, the game I have today, I've got Arizona and Utah, and we were sitting with the coaches yesterday, and the OC at Arizona was very honest. He's just like, yeah, we're not running any of this stuff. We can't. You know, we can't protect against these guys. And even though they've got a creative quarterback, he's choosing not to run. And if that's the case, then you're just really up against it. And that, unfortunately, is what it looks like with the Giants. And then all of that seeps into every phase of the team. Everybody feels some of that lifelessness. And, man, that was a tough watch last night.
All right, Brock, let's get on to this big one, the Huskies-Oregon rivalry. This is a big one, man. And tell me, I want to know what you think. Where do the Huskies have the advantage, and where's the spots that you think Oregon has the advantage over the Huskies?
Yeah, that's a good question, Jake. I think there's a couple things. I think the reason the Huskies are favored by 3 is because they're a team that is built for, you know, this moment. They're built for this season. They're built with 6 seniors on defense and a senior, fourth-year senior quarterback and a fourth-year senior tailback and a fourth-year senior right tackle in a lot of components and pieces that have played in big games and in big moments and are not going to be overwhelmed. You know, frankly, I don't think we're overwhelmed down in Atlanta against Auburn. Unfortunately, just did not execute in the red zone on 5 different occasions and didn't get it done there. So I think that's why they're favored, is this Mario Cristobal's first year. While Justin Herbert's a huge prospect, you know, he is a junior and has just started for about a year and a half. And a lot of the pieces there are very young, especially in their secondary. So if I were to look for some areas of advantage, I think it is some of that experience. 1, that's why they're favored. I think 2, some of the Huskies just weaponry, some of their offensive weapons, and they're going to have to win in a lot of man-on-man situations. And Jim Leavitt, the D coordinator there at Oregon, is an aggressive guy. They've known him. They've played against that scheme. Browning has when Leavitt was at Colorado last year at Oregon. So there should not be any like shocking surprises. Like, oh my gosh, where is this coming from? But those guys on the perimeter for the Huskies Cincinnati's got to win, because they're going to, you know, the philosophy will be to stop the run and not let Myles Gaskin just control the game and beat him and put the pressure on Jake Browning. And even though he's a fourth-year starter, can he play with a little heat? Can he play with some chaos? Can he throw into tight windows? So I think they have advantage on the perimeter, but that's got to live out. And then defensively, you know, this will be Justin Herbert's biggest test. And I would imagine there's a lot of NFL scouts, GMs, people that are going to make their way to Eugene, Oregon on what looks like a pretty beautiful weekend. And they're going to want to see how this kid responds against a defense that looks like an NFL defense, an advantage to all the things that Jimmy Lake can do with an incredibly experienced secondary. You know, I remember saying to Jimmy before the ASU game, I said, do you ever fight doing too much coverage-wise? And he's like, you know, not really, man, because these guys are very honest with me. You know, Taylor Rapp and JoJo, and I'll ask these guys, is it too much? And they're like, no, we want all of this. We need to change the pictures, because there's some areas up front where their D-line is, I think, at a pretty severe disadvantage to Oregon's offensive line.
Now, going off of Justin Herbert, what do you see from him? Yes, the physical gifts and all that stuff. Where do you think he's at in his game right now, Brock? Is he, in your mind, ready to fit the bill of first-round NFL draft pick? Do you think he's at that level yet, or do you think he needs another year?
Yeah, I honestly think that this game is going to tell us an awful lot. I think he is a guy that was a late bloomer, Jake. You know, frankly, very different than you. You know, you were a guy that worked unbelievably hard from like fifth grade on. Your skill set was so refined. You got to skyline. You started to like maximize so much of your gifts. You went to BYU as a true freshman and did everything, because your ceiling, man, you tapped it out. You reached it physically and I think fundamentally pretty quickly. And you know, and I say all that in a real positive way. He was not. I mean, he's a guy that got injured his senior year of high school. He's a guy that was really, I think, kind of thin and gangly there going to Oregon, was not recruited by a lot of people, and had to grow into this frame. And I think because of it, is just now kind of coming into hitting his ceiling physically. And you know, I think that there's some advantages to both of those. I don't think they're better or worse. But, I think this is going to go a long ways to seeing whether or not, you know, truly he can, you know, handle a big, big moment. He didn't do it. Unfortunately, in the bowl game last year, he didn't do it, unfortunately, against Stanford, where they had that game, they had that win, and they just did not manage it really well, both as a team and offensively. It wasn't all on him. Certainly, I put much more of that on the play caller and you know, in the coaching situation there. But not to duck your question, Jake, this will be an enormous part of the evaluation. This is the game that NFL people want to see him take it over and win, to make all the throws, to break the pocket, to have people hanging in his feet. He's going to have 8 third downs tomorrow. You pretty much know how this game's going to look. You know, the Huskies are going to try to get the game to third down, and are you going to be able to beat us with your legs, with your arm? Do everything Eli Manning could not do, right? Elevate people and use your athleticism. That will be the game tomorrow in Eugene.
Brock, do your best to swim amongst the sinners out there, okay? I want you to heal. I want you to heal them. Help them.
Hey, that is what the people say. You come here, I don't see any sin. I see one beautiful, lovely city that I'm going to get to walk around the streets here after our meetings this morning a little bit.
All right. Have fun out there, man.
All right, Bob. You got it, bud.
There he is.
Jake.
See you, Brock.
Brock Heward, obviously part of the Brock and Salk show. He's out there in Salt Lake City doing his work. Where's Salk again? Where the heck did he go? I can't remember where
Suncadia.
He's Suncadia. Okay.
He's got some big work out there probably on the golf links.
I'm guessing he's crashed right now. He's probably just nice and cozy in bed. He's doing just fine. So our thanks to Brock Heward. Coming up, we've got three big, solid football questions. Blue 42 is happening. It's Bob Stelton and Jake Heaps in for Brock and Salk.
Here we go.
This is Coors Light's Blue 42.
We're going to go red, right, tight, close, sprint left, GU corner, halfback, flat, on two. Ready, right.
Blue 42 is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light. The mountains turn blue at 42 degrees.
Blue 42.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Song.
Blue 42. Blue 42.
All right, here we go. Three really good, really solid football questions. Are you ready, Jake?
Yeah, I'm dialed, man. Let's do it.
Because there was some work put into this stuff, so I want you to really take your time with it.
I'll do my best.
With all credit to you, man.
Thanks, Bob.
All right, question number one, and I'm interested to hear your thoughts on this because I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around how big of a deal is this whole Pac-12 officiating incident?
Yeah.
I get the optics, but
right.
Just literally, how bad is this?
Well, to me, this is horrible. This is absolutely horrible in terms of everything. This isn't just a one-sided thing. This isn't just one incident. So far up to this point, I think the public opinion of Larry Scott, the Pac-12 commissioner, is not good. And now when you have this, when you have somebody else as part of the hierarchy of the Pac-12 calling in to the Pac-12 officiating during a game and saying, no, that's not a targeting call, overruling the people that you're paying to make those decisions, that's bad news in every way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. And if this doesn't open up the eyes of the university presidents in the Pac-12, I don't know what will. To me, this is an obvious thing that there is a lot of things wrong with what's going on in the Pac-12 in terms of Larry Scott, and I think this is a kind of a cherry on top of they need to move on from him. That's just my opinion on that.
Question number two. Everybody's excited about facing Marshawn Lynch this weekend when the Seahawks play the Raiders. Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yeah, in my mind, he is. And I really sat and thought about this for a while because when you look at the numbers, you wouldn't say, man, this guy is a clear first ballot Hall of Famer. But by the end of it, he is going to be top 25 in rushing yardage. He's going to be top 15 all time in touchdowns. And I think when you look at it, he is a guy that is such a polarizing figure. And he helped, you know, changed kind of the course of a franchise in the Seattle Seahawks and helped make them one of the most polarizing teams in a certain time frame. I think Marshawn Lynch has every billing of being a Hall of Fame player.
Question number three. Now, I threw this one to John Clayton because I just feel like you got Ed Dixon coming back. You've got J.D. McKissick coming back.
Yeah.
You're going to have to make some roster moves in order to make room for them. And,
yep.
And one of the first names that popped into my mind in terms of roster casualties would be Brandon Marshall because he's not been what you were hoping he was going to be. He's dropping the passes, the few passes that he does have coming his way.
Yeah.
He's dropped too many of them, and he's been displaced on the depth chart. Moore has moved ahead of him.
Right.
So he just seems to be a guy without a spot.
Yeah, and I was one of the biggest fans of this signing. I was really excited about the potential of Brandon Marshall and what he has to offer because I think his potential is a game-changing thing for this offense, but you got to catch the football. Ultimately, you got to catch the football, and he's had some really bad drops. And when you see a guy like David Moore overtaking a long-time all-pro receiver like Brandon Marshall, that's not a good sign. So I think when you look at this casualty-wise, you're looking at Ed Dixon. We'll see what happens. They've tried to go with two tight ends on the roster, on the active roster. I think you're kind of playing Russian roulette with that. I would like to see them keep three on the roster at the tight end position. So that, to me, would leave a Brandon Marshall hanging out to dry. J.D. McKissick coming back, he's more of a running back slash receiver.
Slash return.
Right, and that's kind of a situation where you look at C.J. Procise and you go, okay, what are they going to do with C.J. Procise? Because that's kind of the role that he's filling in for is J.D. McKissick's role. And J.D. McKissick, when he comes back, he's going to be a pivotal part of this offense. So it'll be interesting. To me, it's Brandon Marshall or C.J. Procise.
I don't get what's going on with Procise. This is a guy who you've seen have an impact.
Yeah.
Few times he's been healthy.
Talent, very talented.
That. What is the deal with C.J. Procise? He's not even part of their game plan.
No,
why do they have him?
Presumably he's healthy,
yeah.
Yet he's been a healthy scratch.
Right, and that's, to me, Kyle, that's what I sit there and say is, okay, if you're going to keep C.J. Procise on this roster, it's because he is a receiving running back. You look at him as an opportunity to be a mismatch, and I know that's what they see him and view him as. But, the injury part of it has been a huge thing in his career. It's been unfortunate because he is a talented football player. There, he has a lot to offer. But as you see this, as this has gone on, I think you've seen the way this offense has taken shape. And they're not necessarily trying to put running backs out on the outside and create mismatches with their drop-back pass game. They are very much focused and dialed in on a strong running game, playing play action behind it. And, it leaves a guy like C.J. Procise out on the edge.
Texter says, why do you think J.D. McKissick is coming back? There's no room for him. We have backs we like a lot more in our system.
Yeah,
I know he's coming back. I don't think he is.
No,
I know he is.
He is coming back. And what you're not understanding is that J.D. McKissic is not going to be an every down back. You're not handing this guy the ball.
Yeah, you're not taking carries away from Chris Carson to
pray. No, not at all. And J.D. knows his role very well. He's a change of pace guy that, yes, you can put him in the backfield and you can give him a couple snaps and he's going to make some good runs on the edges. But what he provides is he provides mismatch opportunities to get out on the edge and get a linebacker, get a safety out on him. And you've seen in the past him being able to not only get the ball in space, but torch those guys. And that's what J.D. McKissic brings, and that's what this offense needs. They need a dynamic change of pace guy along with Tyler Lockett that we can get some mismatches on in terms of linebackers and safeties.
He brings what you were hoping ProSize was going to bring.
Exactly.
Not the same exact build or anything, but just in terms of that versatility.
Yep.
That mismatch.
Yeah, and that's what you're looking for. And JD is a converted running – he's basically a receiver. You know, he played running back in college, played a little slot receiver, but when he got into the league, Atlanta, they saw him as a receiver. And then when he came over to the Seahawks, I know Pete Carroll values that versatility so much, and that's why JD has a strong role on this offense.
Yeah, so barring some sort of – injury that we're not aware of. He's healing. He will be back. Ed Dixon will be back.
Yes.
And the Seahawks will have to make a couple of roster moves.
They will, absolutely.
So we'll see what those are and who's going to be a roster casualty because of that. And I think Brandon Marshall seems to be the first target.
He'll be up on the top of that list. Yes.
Yeah.
He got a nice trip to London out of the deal first.
Yes, he did.
First class to London. Maybe yes. It's a bye week. You just hang out in Europe. You stay there.
Yeah, I think he's got to have a big game. And maybe a decision's already being made in their minds, like, all right, yeah, we're going to keep them here until these guys are ready.
Yeah.
But
to me, as they started playing David Moore, giving him more snaps, and then he started producing, and he got two touchdowns, to me, that kind of put the nail in the coffin on that whole situation. They wanted to avoid this. They wanted Brandon Marshall to step up and be the guy. And I think that everybody would. I think Russell Wilson would love for Brandon Marshall to have been the guy that is the billing of who he is, this big
body. You want that size.
Strong hands, you know, all those things. But up to this point, he hasn't been able to bring anything dynamic to this offense, and especially when Doug Baldwin was out.
We'll talk more Seahawks with our buddy Brady Henderson, covers the Seahawks for ESPN.com. He'll join us next here. It's Bob Stelton and Jake Heaps in for Brock and Salk.